Good afternoon, radio listeners. This is DJ Braveheart for LaSalle College Radio, and I'm here with Scott Mickelson and Dan Coyle. Scott is debuting his first solo album on May 4th.
We actually began touring about a year and a half ago. We had the same agent, and Dan lives in New York, and I live in San Francisco, and we were going on the same route, and she put us together for a couple of shows, and then we decided to continue that. So we've done close to 60 shows together, and during the course of that time, we were getting ready for a Northwest tour, and Dan was staying at my house, and I have a studio, and I'm a producer, and that's kind of like my bread and butter, and I said, let's try a couple things, and it turned out to be his record, Perfect World, Perfect Beat. And so he'll be playing a lot of that stuff on the tour, and then I just finished my record just very recently.
So, I mean, for listeners who may not be familiar with your work, you want to just give us a short overview?
Okay. I've been doing it a long time, and I'll just kind of give the quick synopsis. I had a band for a few years called Fat Opie, and I was, the singer-songwriter, lead guy, and we did 5 records, and had some pretty high almost, and was signed with a couple of labels and major management, and won a national band search thing for MTV. Wow. And all this stuff. But as things go on, it's same old story, back doing the clubs and
yes.
But that's typical. So after my last Fat Opie record, which was 2012 or 2013, I figured it was time to just disband and really just kind of do the kind of record I wanted to do. Even with the last Fat Opie record, we started out tentatively as if we were a band, but I ended up just doing the whole thing, and I should have probably called that a Mickelson record. But this is like a whole clean new slate, and I got to work with over 20 of the best Bay Area musicians and people I've always wanted to work with. And so I get asked a lot about how I arrange the record, because if you listen, the arrangement on every song is very different, and the instrumentation changes dramatically. And it wasn't so much an intentional thing. It was more like, gee, I always loved this band called The Family Crest, who you might know. And I would love to have strings. I wonder if the lead guy would do an arrangement for me. And so now I have strings, and then that turned into 3 songs with strings. And then there was a well-known horn player that I always thought was great, and what could I have him on? And so by bringing together all the different musicians, it just kind of blossomed into quite a production. I'm really proud of it.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear it. How long have you been playing music, personally?
I'll just say I started probably guitar when I was 8. So,
Yeah, wow.
In the early 20s, 1922, 23, something like that. You do the math.
How would you describe your music?
Here it comes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it's... I guess consider myself as just alternative rock, but that word or that phrase, I don't know how people define that anymore.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, I'm very influenced by, I like rock-oriented stuff, but unusual. I love Radiohead, and then I listen to a lot of 50s music just because I like 50s records.
Yep.
But because I play banjo on a lot of the songs, people are so quick to call it Americana, which it is not. And I get, I get kind of offended by it, because to me, Americana is a very specific genre, and it's usually very retro, and it's very rootsy, and it's, very limited in chordal progression, and it's great, and it's just not what I do at all. And wow. I just picked up the banjo. I started recording with the banjo on my second record with Fat Opie, and one of those songs became popular and happened to have been a banjo song. And then on the Airstream record, we had kind of a minor hit, and that happened to have been recorded on the banjo. And nobody was calling it Americana.
Yeah.
It was always just alt rock. But now that Americana has become kind of like the new thing, although I think it's kind of the foot stomp thing. I think it's kind of on the way out. Maybe they'll stop doing that. But even you won't even recognize. I mean, there's a banjo on probably 10 out of the 11 songs, but nothing will sound like Americana.
Yeah. So, I mean, I also heard or read that, is it you that describe yourself as a mixture of Tom Waits and Radiohead?
Well, I get that. Well, I added the Radiohead because sometimes the what I love about them is the way they use the studio and the way they completely use what can be done in the studio technically with compression and EQ and all of this. They use it like a real art form. They're not just trying to play. I mean, since the Bends, they're not just trying to play as a rock band and try to use the production to help tell the story in a very different way. And over the years, I've always been really influenced by that, as, millions of bands. Mm-hmm. So I think production-wise, just, the way that they are just unafraid to just do anything, it's going to drive people either to really love it or hate it, and I like that. And the Tom Waits thing, I get, I think just lyrically, I write a lot about the American condition and a lot of its narrative and with characters. And I love Tom Waits and I wear his hat. I went on eBay. I bought this hat. I paid $212,000 as the original Tom Waits hat. And I wear the Band-Aid on my head to commemorate the Frank's Wild years. That was a unfortunate exercising accident.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting how you turned to a different art. You went to painting and writing. Tell us a little bit about how that transition was.
Oh, after the Airstream record, we became very. We were auditioning at Columbia Records and got really close to what I thought was going to be the one. And when that didn't really culminate into anything, I found it difficult to kind of rev up the machine again and write another album and do the whole thing. And I began to get ill and I started to lose some abilities. And eventually I just stopped doing music 100%. And during that time, I continued my degree in illustration and just literally stopped doing music completely for about 7 or 8 years and didn't talk about it and didn't pick up a guitar. I mean, literally stopped it. And then, so during that time, I also became a father, and I think anybody who's a writer and an illustrator, when they have a kid, they're prone to want to write a children's book, which I did, and I actually got it published. I wrote and illustrated it and had a literary agent and all that stuff, and I was doing a lot of fine art and doing solo shows and was getting some awards and things like that. But to be honest, it was really just repressing music. I don't think I was all that good at that. And I knew that this was just like, what's the word when you have like a replacement for something? But help me, Dan.
No, replacement for something.
Replacement, yeah. That's a good one. Yeah, I'll think of it as soon as I leave and drive away. But and then when I did my last one-man show, in San Francisco, the woman realized that I was the singer for Fat Opie, and she told me I should, I should play at the opening and all this stuff. And I told her I haven't played in years and I don't really do it anymore. And then just to try to get more people to the opening, I was thinking I will play a couple songs and really in the interest of trying to sell my paintings. So I got 2 out of the 3 original members and hired a couple other players, and we did a very quick and shoddy set, and then I never painted again, and that was the beginning. And then I started writing and going to open mics and literally had to start from scratch to figure out how to play the guitar again, and I would get up and do open mics and not be able to get halfway through a song. And so it was a couple of years of really getting the cobwebs out and getting my abilities back, and then I did Victoryville and started touring.
So your new album, Flickering, coming out May 4th, where does the name come from?
Well, there's a line in a song, I don't burn bright, but at least I'm flickering.
Ooh, I like that.
Hey, I have a t-shirt with that on. It's, to me, it's just, we're all working really hard, and you know, we're all, everybody wants to be more than what they are, you mm-hmm. know, a lot of people do, and the character in the song is just saying, you know, I may not be this and I may not be that, but at least I'm this, and mm-hmm. and he's trying to be satisfied with who you are and where you are, and try to, you know, see it through those lenses,
yeah,
which is, you know, impossible to do when you're trying to do what Dan and I are doing and struggling artist thing. So mm-hmm. it's a theme that everybody kind of can identify with on one level. Oh, yeah. And so I had a lot of reaction when I would play that live and decided to make that the title track.
So you also recorded your album in your home. Was that the first
one? No, it isn't. I mean, in earlier years, I always had an 8-track reel-to-reel. And okay. I used to, I mean, I'm not really an engineer, but I always did demos and stuff like most writers before you could use a computer to do it. And then I started working in Pro Tools around, you know, several years ago. And but I wasn't engineering, I was just producing, and I used to produce for a label, and a lot of that sometimes it was tape, sometimes it was digital. But by the time I got to Victoryville, I had to really just start taking the reins of recording it myself, because I didn't have any kind of a budget or anything. So I kind of forced myself to learn it, and then I moved into a bigger house and have a dedicated control room and a dedicated studio now. And so I've done 4 or 5 records in my house, but I think doing Flickering there was the one that kind of forced me to upgrade all my gear and you know, kind of make it more professional.
And then you also asked for a little help from the San Francisco area for this album, correct? Like, what kind of reception did you receive?
I was really surprised. I was when I was reaching out for players, very few I knew. They were just people I knew from Facebook mm-hmm. or for just word of mouth. And I would say, you know, 60 to 70% of them just wanted to be part of it for free, which was really made me feel great. Yeah. So, and it was more and more, once the word started happening that this was happening, people were coming to me wanting to be on the record. And it was very flattering, because I was playing very little and I was mostly just doing solo shows. And I guess enough people liked the songs or were familiar with some of the songs and wanted to contribute. So it was extremely rewarding, because the Bay Area is not necessarily the warmest and friendliest scene, to be honest. It's a lot of every man for themselves, more so than other places I've been. So, yeah, this made me feel like I was kind of being reborn and, you know, really enjoying the Bay Area music scene more than ever. So that's been great.
I'm so sorry we missed you in Cambridge the other night. How'd the show go?
You missed what was probably the greatest show to ever happen at TT the Bear in their 40 years of business. I think they're making a plaque for us, right?
Right.
And they're taking down some of the big posters that they've had up there since the 70s, and they have a life-size poster that they're going to put up. So it went pretty well.
Now, I know I've been to a lot of shows in Boston, and the artists always say, oh, Boston's the best crowd to play for. Do they just say that? Is it true? How did you feel? Be honest.
To be honest, it was really fun playing there. We had a nice crowd, and I love coming back here, because I am from Massachusetts mm-hmm. originally. And so when I come back, of course, I get to see friends and family. And, you know, I thought everybody was really, really respectful and really into it, and everybody, you know, was listening. When you go to a big rock club and you're playing a solo kind of stuff, sometimes it can get really chatty, and I found everybody really, really keyed into the show and super friendly, and sold a lot of CDs and made a lot of new friends. And, yeah, it was I love Boston.
So for both of you, how do the listeners get your music, and how do they get it in such a way that you get the most money out of it, too?
I thought you were like, how do they get it? Like, how do they comprehend it? Like, wow, this is quite a question.
Well, I have a case of them in the back of my car. That would be the most immediate way to. No. If you go to my website, and until the record's released on iTunes and all that stuff, which won't be May, if you want to pre-order it, you can just go to mickelsonmusic.com and PayPal, and I'll sign it to you, and it's really direct and fun that way.
Thank you guys for coming. I'm DJ Braveheart. This is Scott Mickelson. Thank you, and have a great day.
Thank you.